That was The Garden Song by Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I'd like to welcome you to the Lopez Garden Spot, a half-hour organic gardening show that airs live on the first Wednesday of each month, and then is broadcast as a repeat each subsequent Wednesday in the same month. I'm Ann Wurlich-Karp, and my co-host for the show is...
Jenny Flynn.
Each month on the show, we'll have a topic for discussion that relates to what we're doing in our gardens, and a guest gardener or farmer. This month's guest is Kim Best. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
We're so glad to have you. In just a bit, we'll have Kim tell us more about her gardens and what she's doing there in this month of April. But before we continue on with our show, we'd like to say you are listening to KLOI-LP-FM 102.9 Community Radio from beautiful Lopez Island. All views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and or guest and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KLOI or GIVE. Some topics we'll be talking about this month are transplanting seed starts and the use of greenhouses, cloches, hoop houses, and cold frames. If we'll have time, we'll also be revisiting the topic of crop rotation. Around a quarter after the hour, we'll open up the phone lines at 468-3656 for comments or questions from listeners. And we're going to start off today with Jeannie telling us about some upcoming garden events.
Hi, this is the April calendar for the Lopez Gardener Spot. On Thursday, April 14th, the Lopez Island Garden Club will have their highly anticipated annual plant sale and auction at Woodman Hall on Fisherman Bay Road. The doors will open for the plant sale at 10 a.m. and the auction will begin at 10:30 a.m. So bring your pocketbooks full. There will be a great bargains on numerous plants with veggies, flowers, shrubs, and trees. Plant donations will be accepted the day before on Wednesday, April 13th at Woodman Hall from 3 to 5 p.m. On Wednesday, April 20th, 6 days later, the Orcas Island Garden Club will meet in the Madrona Room at the Orcas Center at 10 a.m. There will be a short business meeting followed by a presentation given by Cisco Morris. Cisco airs his popular gardening segments on King 5 TV and Northwest Cable News broadcast Gardening with Cisco. He also gives gardening advice mixed with a hearty dose of humor every Saturday morning on News Talk 97.3 KIRP-FM. His book, Ask Cisco, was among the top-selling garden books nationwide. The meeting and presentation are open to all. The Lopez Farmers Market annual meeting will take place on Thursday, April 21st at 7 p.m. at the Lopez Island Golf Club. Everyone who would like to sell plants is welcome. And people who aren't selling plants are welcome. April 22nd is Earth Day. Saturday, April 30th, starting at 4 p.m., there will be a procession of the species celebration, that's POSC, on the streets of Lopez Village. Participants will dress up as wildlife or other elements from the natural world. The event is open to the public and will be followed by a ceremony to honor volunteers in the community with music and for refreshments. For more information, call 468-2951. The 8th annual Tour de Lopez will take place on Saturday, April 30th. This bicycle ride is a non-competitive rural road tour with marked short and long routes on public county roads through the scenic landscapes of Lopez. Registration forms are online at www.lopezisland.com. The Skagit Valley Tulip Festival is happening during the whole month of April. Enjoy the celebration of spring as millions of tulips burst into bloom. Specific events and 2011 maps are available online at www.tulipfestival.org.
So now we're off to the content of the show, and we're just so happy to have Kim Bast here. All those that are living on Lopez Island and frequent visitors have known Kim in the past for her chef, being the chef at the Bay Cafe and just providing community meals with the locavores. And so, Kim, could you tell us a little bit about your background and then how you came to be a gardener?
Well, my gardening background, I am the 11th generation in this country of Pennsylvania Dutch heritage.
Okay.
And I was the eldest grandchild, and so was able to really get to know my grandparents' siblings. And they still did a lot of preserving and canning and putting food away and gardening. So at a very early age, I was exposed to the joy of growing your own food and what that meant and the importance of food. My mom was a single mom growing up. My parents divorced. And I never knew that we didn't have a huge budget for groceries because we always ate so well. We always had a garden. We were always involved in the garden. Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, that corresponded to bringing the food into the kitchen and cooking the food and savoring it. And that was always a family experience for us. So we would cook on the weekends and then on Saturday and enjoy our meal and make enough for leftovers for Sunday. And then Sunday we would plan our menu for the following weekend. And so I grew up associating food with family, and I feel blessed to have experienced its richnesses in life. And moving to Lopez, it was just kind of a natural jump from preparing food. I love food.
When you grew up, Kim, I'm sorry to interrupt, but was that in the Pacific Northwest?
No, I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, so big, big, big Pennsylvania Dutch country.
Yeah.
found my way to the Pacific Northwest about 10 years ago.
Did your grandparents have root cellars and all, you know, to preserve food for the winter?
My grandparents didn't, but their siblings did. My grandparents kind of, they moved to the suburbs, but their siblings kind of maintained a more rural lifestyle, and so they had root cellars. My grandparents lived in a rather newish modern house, but, you know, their siblings had root cellars and big barrels of pickles and sauerkraut in the basement. They made dandelion wine, you know, traditional Pennsylvania Dutch pickles and, you know, you name it. So.
Mm-hmm. Huh. How interesting.
So then when you came to Lopez, is that when you started your own gardens?
I'd had, you know, little gardens throughout my life. I lived in Flagstaff, Arizona for 10 years, and that was not a very hospitable gardening climate. You know, very cold, very, very short season, then very hot in the summer. And very dry. So I didn't do any gardening there, but when I moved to the Pacific Northwest, it just seemed like the perfect thing to do. And I lived in Seattle for a few years, had some raised beds, but then moved to Lopez, and, you know, there was garden space available. And so I really dove in at that point.
Have you adhered to any specific technique or method of gardening or...
Well, I, you know, kind of our personal mission is that we want to leave the soil in better shape than we found it. And in that, not using, you know, any chemical fertilizers, any chemical pesticides, really learning about, you know, what makes up the soil of our particular place and increasing its health instead of depleting it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, growing food, you're taking out. So what can we do to put back in?
I would like to interrupt for a second and say in the Seattle Times last week, I think it was the Thursday issue, said that for the second year in a row, San Juan County is the healthiest county in the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. And it's because we grow our food ourselves or buy organic food when we buy food. So pat yourself on the back for being so healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's amazing to live in a place where food is such a high priority mm-hmm. for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're foodies here, yeah. and it's
and
it just adds
such a richness. And there's the support in the community, yeah. helping each other in, you know, ideas for better growing and preparing food too.
Absolutely,
I mean, it's just wonderful. The community meals where all the recipes are available for everybody to go home and prepare what they've eaten mm-hmm. that evening.
Mm-hmm. And the potlucks are absolutely yeah. wonderful.
There are no better potlucks yeah. in the entire world. I'm sorry, no matter where
people.
You're listening.
Yeah. With yeah. 300 people coming together.
Yeah. We had a potluck for our wedding.
Oh,
and our
great.
Our family from the East Coast was terrified that they would not be fed well. And their minds were
Mistake.
Blown. Exactly.
Well, would you describe your gardens to us? My husband was fortunate enough to come over and visit with you in your gardens, and I didn't get to make it that day. And I just would like to have a description of how you've organized your gardening space.
Well, we use raised beds for our winter crops. Our farm is very, very wet. I mean, especially this year.
Are those wooden or are
mounded?
No,
we just mound them. Yeah. We just mound mm-hmm. them so that we can move them, mm-hmm. and they're not permanent in that way. Let's see, within our garden fence, we have about 22,000 square feet, and we've been mm-hmm. planting, I'd say about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet, or I should say linear rows. Mm-hmm. And so,
Do you crop rotations?
Yes.
So you're leaving some.
Yes, we rotate every year. We rotate. Some of the things we'll do is if one year we have a heavy feeder in those garden beds, say corn or mm-hmm. tomatoes or something mm-hmm. like that, we'll do peas or something like that the following year.
Do you ever just put a cover crop and leave it for a whole year?
Not for a whole year, but we'll mm-hmm. do it seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
And rotate that way, and we definitely yeah. do give beds. Rest.
Mm-hmm.
We move things every year because, and I know that there are certain other people will say that you can plant something for a few years, but we just feel, because we don't often get those that are weather extremes,
mm-hmm.
The deep freezes,
right.
that kind of thing that can really break a parasite or a pest mm-hmm. cycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just rotate because, it's working, and I'm hoping that will help us alleviate any problems in the future.
Yeah, we talked a little bit last month about crop rotation, and that when you have a leafy vegetable, mm-hmm. then the next year you would plant a flowering vegetable,
yes.
like a tomato or a squash. And then in that area you would plant the following year.
A root.
You would plant a root,
mm-hmm.
and then the following year you plant a legume, and then you repeat. So it's mm-hmm. like a four-year cycle.
And we do that the best we can.
Yeah, it's so
it is. You have to get really, really creative.
Yeah,
but we keep copious notes and make charts mm-hmm. every year of what our garden is.
Mm-hmm.
I've even put together like a workbook spreadsheet in Excel.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we can, it takes time, and it's kind of a head scratcher during the season. When am I going to find time to document mm-hmm. this stuff? But
mm-hmm.
it makes quite a difference because, when you're in the moment and you're experiencing something so intensely, like the wetness right now,
right.
we might not remember that next year.
Yeah,
so,
right.
It's always nice to put a little explanation, and then also it's a learning tool for others. You can
mm-hmm.
share that information.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, this is the first year I'm really doing the documentation.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of had in my head what I had in different places last
yep.
year or the year before, but I'm starting to be more aware of how good it is for me
mm-hmm.
to make
mm-hmm.
sure I do this kind of rotation. Well, and I had a problem with my planting garlic where my onions were.
Yeah.
And then I got rust. And I'm not sure that actually I know a lot of people last year got rust with
mm-hmm.
their...
It was so wet.
Yeah. But it made me very aware something wasn't quite right in it.
Exactly.
And then when I started investigating, realized, I should have never
mm-hmm.
put those, switched them.
Yeah.
I should have put them both in a totally...
Mm-hmm.
different area where the flowering plants, the squash, maybe had been the year before.
Yeah. We had that happen one year with the rust, but I don't think I had onions in it the year before. I don't know what I had. I just had rust on my garlics and pulled
them
all up.
It could have been just a coincidence, but
but
it really made me start to think, I thought I did something that,
mm-hmm.
Caused this to happen. Then I did hear from other people they had it also. Well, you do raised beds. Do you do companion planting too with flowers, or do you keep your flowers in separate places?
we enjoy beauty in the garden. So we have flowers and, you know, I mean, certain things will spring up that seeded themselves last year. And we think, well, you know, it's going to be really beautiful to have that calendula there. So have at it.
Yeah.
And herbs. And, you know, there's so many beneficial herbs that the flowers are beautiful and they're edibles as well. And they bring bees into the garden and other wildlife. So we shoot for beauty. So it's, you know, and in that, trying to maintain a little bit of a sense of wildness, because really our food gardens, they're so structured that little bit of wildness feels, I don't know, it feels like we're getting closer to a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Have you seen very many insects yet this year?
Not a lot, and I think it has to do with, you know, just how wet and cold it still is. I mean, I was shocked. I was trying to do something outside yesterday, and I came back in.
Yeah.
It's so I don't blame them. But, you know, we have some willows that have pollen very early, and so I have seen some bees, but not a ton.
Yeah, I've seen one bumblebee come to my peach tree outside my kitchen window, and that's it.
Yeah. Not much.
Yeah. Do you use a lunar calendar to do your planting?
We don't. I mean, we've talked about it and we've thought about it, but it's our schedules are somewhat chaotic and crazy. So we more take a look at what the prevailing weather patterns are, and we look at our notes from the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll change things around. You know, I'll make a note that, well, we should have started that a little bit later, or because we started it a little earlier, it did better. So it's mostly from personal experience and talking to others.
Mm-hmm. Years ago, we tried to do some lunar planting, and then I sort of forgot about it for a while, and then this year, I'm really thinking I'd like to do it, but in setting out my calendar for when I'm going to plant things, you know, it's been so wet, there's no way I could get things in the ground anyway, and then we're going to be gone for a little trip, and when I should be transplanting all these things, and I was just frustrated because I really want to get out there today where it looks like it's going to be a little bit, you know, may dry out, and there's some sunshine. I want to get some of those little starts in the ground, so... Mm-hmm. Do you utilize a greenhouse?
We do. We start, you know, I do think that our location is even wetter than some others on island.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start as much as we possibly can in the greenhouse and then transplant things. I mean, we grow painted mountain corn, and it's seed that we've received from Wendy Westervelt and Stephen Rumbleski. It's been grown on Lopez for, I don't know, 20 years or something.
At least.
Uh-huh. And we even start that in the greenhouse. And, and what we've found is with even things that don't like to be planted out, with minimal root disturbance, you can have a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, it's things we would never be able to grow. So, you know, even some things will plant up. You know, I started tomatillos already. And I'm going to have
beds in your greenhouse then, or
do you have one bed, and we're able to eat greens out of that bed all winter, and we'll get our first harvest this year of greens out of the bed again, because it's so wet we can't even plant peas yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
they would rot. Yeah, I know.
Well,
as much as we want to get out there.
For the first time, I started peas in my, you know, pop-up flat, or the flats, the 72 pop-up, no, I meant cell packs.
Yes.
Cell packs. And, but they're getting so big, and that the ground is still so wet. And I was just thinking that I've always sprouted my pea seeds and my corn seeds and then put them in the ground. Last year, I did starts. I went ahead and got the corn a couple inches tall before I put them in the ground.
And it really does okay.
I didn't have a real successful corn crop, but I don't know if it's just the variety that I picked last year or where I put them.
And it was
them,
so darn cold last
summer. I think
it probably didn't get the heat it needed.
Yeah, that may be very well what the problem was. And you said something about you do your own fertilizers, and could you tell us a little bit about that? Like, before we go on, I'm sorry. We need to open up our lines in case there's a caller out there that wanted to ask a question. And, the number to call is 468-3656. And if you have any comments or questions, please give us a ring. But now we'll go back to Kim about the fertilizer.
I've kind of tweaked a recipe that's based on the the Stephen Solomon mm-hmm. book, Growing, you know, Veggies West of the Cascades, mm-hmm. which is a Bible for so right. many of us.
Mm-hmm.
So our recipe for a fertilizer mix is, here, I even brought the book right here. It's basically this recipe, and it's a four parts of a seed meal, and we strive to find an organic seed meal. So that would either be soybean or cottonseed meal, 1/2 part lime, and we use equal amounts of the agricultural lime and the dolomite, 1/2 part phosphate rock or bone meal, and 1/2 part kelp meal. Mm-hmm. And that has worked really, really well for us. It's... the thing that I like about it is it's kind of a, you know, a ubiquitous mix for this part of the world, and that we'll have soil differences from location to location, but that's not going to harm anything. It's not so much of something it's going to harm anything. And we do use that. We started making our own potting soil last year and noticed a remarkable difference in the root health of the plants and how well they established themselves, even going out into that awful weather last summer.
Did you put some of this fertilizer in with your potting soil?
We do.
Yeah, what was the percent that you might use?
I can read to you what our recipe is for our potting mix.
Okay.
We use one block of the coconut coir, mm-hmm. and we use that instead of the moss. Mm-hmm. And it's always a challenge bringing things in. You know, we try to kind of use the minimal number of inputs as possible, but we do need them. And the good thing about the coconut coir is at least it's a byproduct of an industry, so mm-hmm. it's not mm-hmm. a yeah. non-renewable mm-hmm. resource. 4 gallons of perlite, mm-hmm. 3 gallons of sand, 4 gallons of our own compost that we make on farm, and 3 pounds of the fertilizer mix. And it's we have a huge watering trough in the greenhouse, so we just mix it in there, and it's worked beautifully. And I even grew tomatoes in large pots in the greenhouse in that last year, and they did remarkably better than they ever did in purchased potting mix.
So, do you ever use a manure? Do you mix up?
We have goats. We have small herd of goats, mm-hmm. and we compost their
that.
Bedding, which contains urine and manure, mm-hmm. all year. And mm-hmm. we'll even in the fall, when we're putting beds kind of to sleep in the garden for the winter, we'll do a sheet fertilizing, and mm-hmm. that will put about 3 or 4 inches of fairly broken down bedding with the manure and the urine mm-hmm. on top of mm-hmm. the beds, and just let that break down throughout the winter,
mm-hmm.
and it also does a remarkable job.
Yeah, I have chickens.
That, yeah.
And I mix it in with the compost.
The poop is good.
It just really grows good, mm-hmm. healthy
yeah.
plants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've gotten, you know, a truckload of the stair manure with the bedding
yeah.
in it from Scott Meyer and also Ken Rose and in different years,
mm-hmm.
and so that's what I've been, you know, if some of it's already composted and then
yeah.
then the rest of it is. And I was just reading and another
that's
book
another
that we
book.
Love is the Maritime Northwest Garden Guide by Seattle Tilth. And they have, for the month of April in there, they have a number of fertilizer tea recipes. And or they call it organic liquid fertilizers. And one that I hadn't done before, but I'm going to try to do it with, because I also got a truckload of just pretty much pure stair manure.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do this either with a manure or with a compost, but you fill a burlap bag half full and then put it in a 25-gallon trash can
mm-hmm.
and let it sit for a couple weeks and then dilute that out to do your... And in the past, I've always bought like an organic granulated
mm-hmm.
fertilizer and made my teas out of that. But I'm going to try it with the stair manure this year and see how that goes. And Jeannie, you do some different teas too, don't you?
Years ago, when we raised pigs, we would use a 5-gallon bucket and put a small scoop into there of
mm-hmm.
their manure, and let it sit for a week or two, and then we would water the plants in our big garden with it, and
mm-hmm.
that worked. And when we first moved to the island, the Borgs had owned 100 acres, of which we have had 30, and their barn, they raised sheep, and so the barn was full of this sheep manure that had never seen the daylight.
Mm-hmm.
So when we took it out and put it in the garden in the early spring, we just put it all over the bed. We had 14-foot corn that
mm-hmm.
year.
Very, very happy plants.
Yeah.
Could not believe it.
Did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask?
Let me think.
As you were talking, I know, I was thinking of
I mean, how much of the food do you process for yourself? I know you do some catering and you work at, do at the school.
I do a lot of processing, and it's been a really fun experience. I feel very blessed that I still have that set of grandparents that I spoke of earlier. Mm-hmm. They're still alive. They're 92.
Oh, wow.
And they get an enormous kick out of it because I've been working for years on recreating the family recipes, those pickles and preserves that I remember eating when I was a little kid. And so there's a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch pickle. It's called chow chow, and it's a mixed pickle, almost like a relish.
It's in that blue book.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which one is that? Is it a recipe book?
Yes.
Oh. And
getting old, it's hard.
Yeah.
Hard to remember stuff.
And I know when you speak of blue book, but I'm not, the title's not coming to me either. So I do a lot of that, and I make lots and lots of sauerkraut. I love sauerkraut. And so we put lots and lots of food away. We make sausage every year and put that in the freezer. So
I remembered one of the questions I was going to ask you. Do you have a schedule when you use like a liquid fertilizer or tea? Do you have a schedule? Like, do you do it weekly or every couple weeks?
It depends on the plant.
Mm-hmm. Do you do it when you put your starts in? Do you use a liquid fertilizer?
I'll do a little bit. I'll mix a little bit in. You know, I'll even use just this powdered fertilizer mix that we make, and I'll put a little bit in. I'll mix it in as I'm putting my transplants out. And again, the amount that I put in depends on how heavy of a feeder the plant is. And things like tomatoes, I'll side dress those throughout the season. And, you know, maybe do it once a month. Just sprinkle a little bit around the outside of the plants and then let the water leach that, the nutrients down towards the roots. And my husband grows lots and lots and lots of beautiful, stunning garlic. And at about this time every year, he will go out and sprinkle a little fertilizer just to give the bulbs kind of a final push before the flowers start to come out.
Does he use your fertilizer mix too?
Yep.
In it besides is that what he uses?
That's
or
all
tea?
That we use.
Oh, okay.
That's
not
all
the
that
tea.
We use. Yeah. We haven't done teas yet. We have the greatest of intentions at the beginning of the season, and then suddenly it's fall. Well, so maybe this year.
I find that because I have this mix sitting around in buckets.
Yeah. It's very easy.
It's easier than messing around with teas. Yeah. You know, you just grab a handful and throw it in there.
And it's lighter.
Yeah, it's a little easier
to maneuver.
And I think the reason I use the liquid tea is because a lot of our garden is in wooden raised beds, and they dry out so much, so the more moisture I can put back into the beds, the better.
Yeah.
I feel my plants do too. Yeah, I think I do that more.
We're on a hillside that drains, and it drains really late in the year, so I've noticed that in my greenhouse I haven't had to water the beds because they're still wet because of the draining hill.
Yeah. I have one little section that we're trying to figure out how to keep it from draining into.
Yeah.
Some block wall to sort of block some of that water.
Yeah, because then it washes out all the fertilizer.
Yeah. It's so great that you've been able to be with us today. We're getting towards the end. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about in your gardening experience that you wanted to share with listeners?
I just want to thank you both for inviting me in to talk about such an exciting thing as food. And the one thing I have to say is I've in my travels in Italy, and I've gone to some large slow food international conventions in Italy, and what I always bring home is there are so many communities within the United States, and this is a blessing, that are they're beginning to reinvest in their local food systems. And not that we, you know, we'll always have work to do, but on Lopez and in San Juan County, we are far ahead in our investment, in our knowledge, in our information, in our experience. So I feel blessed to live in a community such as this.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And just in closing, we want to thank you for tuning in, and we hope you've enjoyed listening. We're looking forward to each month bringing you relevant gardening information and providing knowledgeable guests on the topics of discussion. We thank Kim Bast, today for being such a wonderful guest and for all the comments that she's added to the show. If you'd like to hear about a specific topic or recommend a particular gardener guest, you can send an email to ann@kloi.com. And a big thank you for Ron Metcalf for helping with our engineering today. And thanks again for listening. We'll be back with a new show on Wednesday, May 6th at noon. And if you're listening on another Wednesday in the month besides the first Wednesday, know that it's a pre-recorded show.
By row, I'm gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone plants these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes. And picking stones, we are made of dreams and bones. I feel the need to grow my own, 'cause the time is close at hand.
Time is close at hand.
Rain for grain, sun and rain, I find my way in nature's chain. I tune my body and my brain to the music of the land.
A fair.